This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves, and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So, make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago, and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need.
That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class.
And 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles.
That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are with unlimited 2% cash rewards.
The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready.
Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
I am happy to announce that Target Circle, the program we all know and love, now has automatic deals.
And with the all-new Target Circle being free to join, there has never been an easier way to take advantage of the most deals at Target.
When you shop in-store or online, Target Circle deals will be automatically applied at checkout, so you get the savings without lifting a finger.
And right now, you can sign up for Target Circle 360, which offers unlimited same-day delivery for just $49 for the first year of membership.
That's $50 off the regular price.
And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you can save an extra 5% your way every day.
Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details.
Same-day delivery is subject to terms. Applies to orders over $35.
For 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in-store or at target.com/circle card.
My mom apparently talked to Jennifer Fischel, and the two of them decided that they should be on the show. And
I was actually an amazing idea.
That's a great idea.
Because we've already talked about your mom so much. I mean, I don't know. It might get awkward. I don't know. But it was like, I didn't even think about it. I guess I never thought I would put my mom in that position, but she brought it up. She's like, we thought we should go on.
I
know.
I actually would never have thought of it because my mom normally says no to anything that involves her having to be in the public at all. She's like, oh, no. So we could do a mom's episode, maybe around Mother's Day next year.
I think that
would be
really awesome.
Great idea.
We came up with an idea downstairs that my parents and I were laughing our asses off, where just halfway through the podcast, without ever mentioning it, my mom and dad were going to just start wandering behind me with their canes and walkers. And no one was going to say anything. They were just going to just be wandering in the background, just out of camera, then back over camera. We were just laughing hysterically. It was so funny.
Speaking of, Will, where are you right now?
Where am I?
Yeah, where are you in this present moment?
I am right now in my childhood bedroom in Connecticut doing a podcast with my sitcom mates from the 90s like you do on a normal Tuesday morning.
Yes, listener, there is a Dark Side of the Moon poster behind
there him. There sure is.
So this is your actual childhood bedroom,
this
right?
Actual childhood bedroom. It's like a shrine, essentially.
Oh, my
gosh. Is that a hockey stick, too?
There's a hockey stick.
Hartford, Connecticut, where I'm from, had one thing that was cool, which was the Hartford Whalers. That's Dave Tippett's hockey stick, who was a Hartford Whaler. They were the worst hockey team ever. It was like the Mighty Ducks, if the Mighty Ducks were even worse. And then they left and became the Carolina Hurricanes, and like 2 years later won the Stanley Cup. So it was one of those
things. It was
things
a Hartford curse.
It was. It was like, are you kidding me? So, yes, if I turn the camera the other way, it is a wall of Marilyn Monroe. And I'm, when I mean a wall, I mean like if she
was
alive.
A wall of Marilyn Monroe?
Oh, man. If she was alive, the police would be visiting because they'd be like, all right, there's been weird letters being sent. Like, yes, I had a bit of a thing for Marilyn growing up.
Oh, my God. That's fun. I never knew that.
I didn't know that either.
Did you have cars on your wall? Did you have, like, you must have had, like,
cars there. So over here, there's the Thunderbird over here. And then the other side is all street signs that my brother had stolen.
Just out of curiosity, why didn't your parents, when you moved out, by the way, when you were like 15, why didn't they immediately change your room into something else like my parents did?
Because they rightfully worship me. And it needs to be kept exactly as is for every time I still come home.
So he comes home to do his podcast about the show that he started when he was 16.
That's with 16. His childhood.
Isn't that the
friends.
Normal way of things?
So welcome to Connecticut.
Yes, I can't believe it. In your childhood home. Well, what a week it's been. Since our last episode with David Trainer. And we got to meet Topanga.
Finally.
I'm not sure the episode where we meet Topanga, I was expecting to have so much
heaviness.
Feelings? Yeah, so many feelings. Too much feelings.
Too much feelings. That's a new t-shirt.
A new t-shirt. Yeah. I definitely had a lot of unpacking after that episode.
Were you okay? Were you okay after that, after we talked? I mean, did you walk away feeling all right about the conversation we had, or was there a lot more kind of going on?
No, I did. What I'll say is that I think it was the closest feeling I've ever had to a little bit of an out-of-body experience where I felt a little disassociated from everything we had talked about, and I was processing everything. And I don't know. I said to my husband, I said to Jensen that it was weird because, you know, we have talked about this podcast as being a place where, one, we're going to be honest, and two, we want all of our guests to feel perfectly comfortable sharing any and all of their experiences, whether they're positive, whether they're negative. And that's part of the interesting journey of this for all of us, is trying to figure out what the experience of Boy Meets World was for not only us, but for everyone else that was a part of the show. You know, the other thing I said at the very beginning of this, starting the podcast, is that my only concern was that some of our honesty might change the way people feel about the show. And that would make me really sad. And so I think one of the things that's important for me to say after those wonderful episodes with David, where they were maybe some of our heaviest episodes yet, or maybe definitely our heaviest episodes yet, is that, as I've said many times, Boy Meets World, especially the first couple of seasons, was an absolute joy of my life. And I just wanted to be there every single day. And so even though now I can look back on it with adult eyes and the eyes of a parent and all of the in 2022 eyes, and I can say, wow, maybe some of that wasn't the way it should have gone. It didn't change the fact that while I was there, I was really happy and I loved it.
I think what was funny about, for me, like listening to you tell the story last week, was that I was imagining that you've told the story a bunch, right? I mean, this is sort of the Topanga origin story. Yeah. And yet it was suddenly kind of different, you know? It was like the narrative was changing while you were telling it, because you've suddenly had another person's point of view. And I think that having to revise those narratives that we've told ourselves or that we've told other people for years is super scary. It's important sometimes, you know, and I think it's great. I think it's great. And I don't think that it does takes away from the original narrative. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just now you're 40. And so the story of that you had told all your life from 12 to 39 was, you know, it might be a little different now. And that's, I think that that's really healthy and that's great. And I think that there's going to be a lot of that for me during this experience, you know, because I've been, you know, for instance, I think we talked about when we first started, I've always been telling myself a somewhat negative story about my experience on Boy Meets World, you know, because for me, I was a very unhappy kid. I had all these sort of pressures I was putting on myself. And now I'm looking back and, you know, kind of revising them and being like, oh my God, this was fun. I was having fun. I was laughing. I was meeting these amazing people. And so like, you know, we're going to keep doing that. It's going to keep fluctuating, going in different ways. And also we'll do it again when we're 60, we'll do it again when we're 80, you know, and that's what's going to be
different
fun.
Then.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you'll go through all these, you know, kind of different phases in your life. And as we're you know, every time you look back, you're looking back with, you know, wiser than you were yesterday. So it's going to change your perspective. And I also think to what you said, Danielle, where we don't want to ruin kind of anybody's experience with Boy Meets World. I think it's okay that people understand that it's two things, that Boy Meets World, the show Boy Meets World, can always be the show Boy Meets World, but there were real people making the show and we had our own experiences as we were making this wonderful thing for people. But the show itself is still this wonderful, happy place that brings back all the feelings. And I don't think, again, I always talk about this, I'm not going to like MASH less because I know a lot of, as a super fan of MASH, I grab all the books, I read all the books, I want to know about the making of, I want to know the audition process, I want to know all that stuff. So I think the super fans that are listening to the show and all the fans listening to the show, I think it's going to enhance the experience of watching Boy Meets World more than anything else, that they know kind of some of the stuff we were going through and the process of everything going on. That's the feedback I've gotten most, especially from the first episode, which I think if memory serves, so the idea of the show was Betsy's, and then the idea of talking about the process of making the show was yours, Danielle.
Right, that's
and
right.
And that's one of the creative things I'm getting most from people. One of the feedback, the most feedback I'm getting is, I love the first episode where you talked about the actual process of making the show.
Yeah.
So I think that behind the scenes stuff is people are going to love. And God, just once again, thank you, Betsy Randall, because the idea has been awesome. And
yeah,
been
thank God
along.
For Betsy Randall coming up with this podcast. So in happier news, I cannot wait to get my Too Much Shirts shirt.
Yeah. Me neither.
I am going to rock that.
It's so funny because we used to get cast and crew coats every year. That was like, so they would be,
I'd call
custom
them jackets more than
jackets.
Coats.
Okay, yeah. Sure. But there were also years where there were robes. I don't know if there were robe years too.
Sure.
Anyway, every year, every season of Boy Meets World, the producers would get together and, or the network, I don't know who did this, but they would custom order jackets in whatever size you wanted that had like big Boy Meets World logos. These things are probably huge collector's items and they would have your name engraved on them. And we could never wear them because they would like have our face on them, or they would just say Boy Meets World so loudly.
It would seem, we had the feeling that if we wore it out, it was like we were begging for attention.
Yes. But I can wear Too Much Shirts out. I feel very comfortable wearing Too Much Shirts because it's like, it's one of those if you know, you know kind of shirts. It doesn't declare like the show I was on.
I want to show you all something that is, I'm going to have to unthumbtack it from my wall, but I imagine it has been stuck on my wall since 1993. So hang on.
Do you have the navy blue Boy Meets World robe? I don't know where mine went, but when you said robes,
I have it. But what I actually have on the wall here is our invite, Saturday, March 6th, 1994, at the Renaissance Restaurant and Nightclub. We are celebrating the first season wrap.
Wow.
Of Boy Meets World. So there's the original invite to our first
party
at the Renaissance.
I remember our holiday party very vividly, and we could talk about that maybe some other time. But I don't remember the wrap party. I don't know if I went to the wrap party at the end of the first season.
I'm sure you did.
You must have. You must have.
I don't know.
Have.
I would have bailed if it was after the season ended.
Yeah, if it was like days later, you might have just
I would have gone home to go to school and finish out the year. So, you know, and I don't know if my parents would have been like, it's really important you go to this party. You know,
no, your parents would have let you.
ABC parties at the beginning of every season?
Yes.
Those were fun. Because
there was somewhere it was just
some
like me and Tony. I remember. Yes. But those were fun because there would always be all the shows. You'd get to meet all the actors from other shows. Yeah.
But it was also at like the La Brea Tar Pits or some kind of cool place where it was like, man, this is awesome. Yeah,
I remember that's what the first place I ever met Melissa Joan Hart was at one of those parties.
Yeah.
So get your Too Much Shirt shirt or whatever other merch you want at podmeetsworldshow.com. And I'm really excited about our guest today. Well, first of all, welcome to Pod Meets World. I'm Danielle Fishel.
I'm Ryder Strong.
And I'm Will Friedle.
I'm super excited about our guest today, and I know that you both are as well. And even more so than us, our listeners are going to be ecstatic about this guest because he is definitely one of our most requested, and he's just one of our favorites. So Lee Norris is from North Carolina. He is best known for his role as Stuart Minkus on Boy Meets World, but that may not even be true. Maybe he's best known for One Tree Hill.
Yeah.
He is a very talented actor. By the way, he's in 2 David Fincher movies.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's awesome.
So, I can't wait to talk to him about that. But he reprised his role as Minkus on Girl Meets World. He was in 23 episodes of Boy Meets World, which I also can't wait to talk to him about because I feel like he was in every episode. He's so memorable. It's shocking to me that it ended up only being 23 episodes. And Lee has a son who is about the same age or close to the same age as Adler. He had a son born in 2019. So I'm really excited to... I didn't either. I just found it out. I'm so excited to talk to him about that, too. So please join me in welcoming Lee Norris.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
It's easy for us to strike up a streaming service or bust out a DVD to watch our childhoods, but for actual home movies, it's not that easy. That's why we want to tell you about our friends at Legacy Box.
Legacy Box is the safest and easiest way to digitize those old school memories you have as VHS tapes, stacks of pictures, or those little camcorder cassettes that you'd have no idea how to play now.
And Mother's Day is right around the corner. There's no better gift for the whole family than giving them a way to relive moments like a wedding day or your first steps or that time you fell into the pool at Uncle Rick's house on the 4th of July. The patio was slippery, okay?
Legacy Box takes it all. 15 different types of analog media, even photo negatives. They professionally digitize by hand right here in the USA and then send you back a thumb drive or upload it to the cloud, as well as return your originals.
We recently used Legacy Box to get some VHS tapes converted. Truthfully, we had no idea what was even on them. And we were thrilled to see one of them was my husband's first shave. His parents recorded it, and now we have this incredible memory to watch that we didn't even know existed. It was safe and easy, and it means a lot to us.
Join over 1.5 million families that have trusted Legacy Box with their memories.
Go to legacybox.com/world to save 60% during their best Mother's Day sale ever.
That's legacybox.com/world.
Danielle, tell us a little about your hydration style. Let's say you're thirsty. Are you chugging a glass, taking little sips, pouring it over your head like it's Flashdance? What's going on?
Well, we recently started karate, and the minute we get out of karate, we have been bringing our liquid IV, dumping it into some water, and I chug it because I am parched.
That is absolutely true. Well, I can tell you how I quench my thirst. Thank you so much for asking. It's with liquid IV.
With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink.
And 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness.
It really does quench your thirst faster than water alone, and it tastes good.
And with no artificial sweeteners and 0 sugar, it's your time to try it.
Flavor-wise, I'm partial to pear and green grape. It's a perfect way to hydrate before a big day, especially if you've been up late the night before, which, honestly, I never am, but I'm somehow still tired.
I like white peach. It reminds me of being classy, and I want to swirl it and comment on what year I think it was made, and I think it was this year.
And it's incredibly conveniently packaged. You can just carry it in your pocket all day and then add it to your water. Bingo. Tastes great, and your thirst is quenched, and carpe diem.
I've used it after our long flights to live shows, and it worked to make me feel refreshed and ready to talk about MASH.
However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco.
Or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code WORLD at checkout.
That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code WORLD at liquidiv.com.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with 2 things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available 2-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
Hi, everybody.
Hey. Wow.
Hi, friends. How are you?
Good.
I am so, good to so see excited you. To see you.
We've been waiting for this forever. You have no idea.
Can you believe we're 40-somethings talking about when we were 12?
Yep.
No.
We're still getting used to it.
I know.
It's so weird.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, you all look good. That's all that matters.
You do too, man.
Thanks, so buddy. Do you. You look incredible. Wait, I want to talk to you. So you're married and you have a son who was born when in 2019?
I do. Yeah, he was born in October. Yeah. Oh
my gosh. Yeah. So my son Adler was born in June of 2019.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
The next generation.
Exactly. They're going to do their own podcast.
Guys, let's start a show.
Exactly.
Let's start a show. There's a nerd. And then there's a hairy kid. And...
Amazing. Indy will for sure be the leader of that group because
absolutely.
Indy's definitely going to be like, okay, let's put this all together. And then he's going to tell everybody what their roles are.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that, actually. I think we should get that going. So Lee, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for being here. Thank you for having me.
This is so exciting. I'm so glad you guys are doing this. This is awesome.
Yeah, we've had a lot of really good conversations. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to any of the episodes.
I have. You better believe. You know I always do my homework. Come on.
I am not surprised at all that you do your homework.
That's awesome.
So you know what we do here. You know how we are, you know, we're very honest and we like to get down into it. So why don't you take us back to the beginning? How did you, as a young boy in North Carolina, decide that you wanted to be an actor? What is your origin story?
I'm just one of those weird kids. It was never you guys met my mom and my dad. It was never them pulling me into it. It was the other way around. I watched The Cosby Show and those shows with kids on it and just said, why can't I be like those kids? I want to be on TV. And, you know, God bless my parents for trying to get me involved in theater and not just laughing at me. You know, they explained that, you know, typically back then, at least you had to typically live in LA or New York. But there were, you know, film studios in North Carolina. Dino De Laurentiis years before that had built studios there to film Firestarter and some other things. So because of those,
awesome movie.
Yeah, great movie. So because of that, there actually was like a local agent who lived nearby, and I was able to meet with her and start going out, you know, mostly for things that were coming to North Carolina to film. But occasionally there would be, you know, national searches for things. And like my third or fourth audition was a national search for a show called The Torkelsons, which our very own Michael Jacobs was, you know, looking for Southern kids. And I was a Southern kid. So I put myself on tape, on the old VHS, you know, tapes. And did the audition, sent it off, forgot about it. Like 2 weeks later, we were on our way to Disney World in Florida for Easter vacation. And we got a call saying, we're flying you out to LA to meet with Michael and then have a screen test for NBC. And my parents are just like, what is happening? So, you know, we go to LA. You guys will appreciate this. I meet with Michael first, just Michael and I do the scenes exactly the way I did them on the tape. And he's like, that was terrible. We got to figure this out. And I'm like, oh my God, what happened? I did it the same way, you know, and he was trying to explain to me as if I was maybe 8 or 9, like the nuance of acting for television. Cause up until this point I'd done like children's theater, which is, you know, all over the top. Right. So he's trying to explain that to me, and you know, I'm trying to take the notes and internalize it as best I can. I tell my parents, I'm like, this may not go well. We go over to NBC. I'm sitting in this waiting room full of kids who are there to screen test. They find out Jenna, and they're all like freaked out that I've been flown in. And they're, of course, all like pro-child actors. You know, you know this, right?
We talked about this, like, you know, Will was the guy from New York. You were the guy from North Carolina. It's always an intimidating position. I love it.
Exactly. But there were already these like mind games going on. Yes. Like this kid who was sitting next to me of the room and says really over the got it. And of course, I just immediately thought he was, you know, telling the truth. And I was like, well, this has been a great trip to LA. I guess I'm not going to get it, you know?
God bless Jason Marsden.
No, it wasn't. I knew Jason. Jason,
I know. You know, it was a spinoff with Jason.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I went in, I did the best I could, and, you know, it worked out. And God bless my parents for just, you know, kind of resetting me and saying, you've come this far and that's a win. Whatever happens from here is icing on the cake. And so, you know, I was able to relax and do it. But so started my journey with TV and Michael and the Torkelsons. We did Almost Home with Jason and Brittany Murphy, who obviously we miss. And, you know, that ended and I thought that might be it until I got a phone call one day and said, you know, come out to LA. We can't find anybody to play this kid, Minkus. It's Michael on the phone. He says, I think you'd be perfect. And I guess now I should be insulted that he thought I was perfect. But...
No.
Not at all.
Not at all. No.
I also think at the beginning, wasn't it Lemke?
It was.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sorry. I have to go back because I have been triggered.
So, oh, no.
Hearing Lee say that he flew you out here after doing your audition and then told you everything you were doing was wrong and he wanted you to do it differently.
Yep.
How different would you say your screen test performance ended up being from the way you did it on the VHS? And yeah, what was that? How was that? What was your original performance and what did Michael want?
I really have no idea. It was such an out of body experience. I mean, really, it was all I could do to just get in the room. I remember there was like 40 executives in there, and I had been raised as a little Southern kid, like manners were a big deal. So I tried to go around the room shaking everybody's hand.
Of course,
all the executives.
Yeah.
And they were like,
35 minutes later.
Yeah. They're like, you've got to do the audition. You can't shake everybody's hand, you know? And I'm like,
that probably got you the part right there.
I honestly think that had as much to do with it as the read, if I'm being honest. I tried to bring it down. I tried to take his notes. I would say it was mostly probably the same, but you know, some of the things that I hit harder, I tried to soften, and you know, but I guarantee you that it was just as much what happened in the room as it was the read.
Wow. So. Michael gave you notes? Weird.
Right? Who would have thought?
What are the chances?
So how long did the Torkelsons go for? Was it one full season or two?
It was one full season. They put us on after the Golden Girls, which was an interesting time slot.
Wow.
And then they like moved us against 60 Minutes, so we got clobbered. And so then they tried to retool it, and they brought in Jason and Britt and Perry King, and you know, we lost some of our siblings, and it was just a different show. And as happens,
that was my first ever Los Angeles screen test was for Almost Home.
Was it really? I didn't know that. Will,
it was between myself and Jason and Shiloh.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Ryder's older brother, incredible. For Almost Home. And Jason, the first time I met one of my best friends in the world, Jason Marsden, we were on an elevator, and Perry King got on the elevator, and I turned to my dad and I went, Dad, Riptide, because that was the show he was on, and it was the coolest show in the world. It was an 80s show where there's this boat, and it was just called Riptide. And Jason turned to me and went, Riptide. Like, he was, like, making fun of me and made fun of me for years about being the guy that was like, Dad, Riptide. Like, he was always making fun of me because Jason was jaded by this point. He's, like, 16 and had been in the business for 17 years.
Jason was probably the most excited about meeting somebody famous. No, like, Jason is like...
exactly. But he made fun of me for years that I pointed out Perry King to my dad, like, Riptide. And he just would always say, Riptide. Like, he thought he was, I'll smack him next time I see
him. So when Michael called you for Boy Meets World, did you end up even needing to audition, or did you just, he just put you in?
No. So that was the best thing. You know, I think I even answered the phone at my house, and it was Michael, and he was like, how would you like to come to LA and do this great part? And I was like, that's the dream as an actor, to not have to audition.
Yeah.
But the only bad news, Yeah. But the only bad news was that it was like two days later that the first table read was happening. And so, and they said to me that they'd been looking everywhere and they hadn't been able to find anybody to play this kid. And so I got on the plane with my mom. Literally the script had been FedExed to me, you know, way pre-email, had been FedExed to me. And I was reading it on the plane, highlighting the lines. And it suddenly became a very stressful experience because I realized that, you know, I had never said these lines before to a casting director, to Michael. And even though they had given me this part, quote unquote, I knew if I didn't get it right, that I would be back on the plane headed back to North Carolina very quickly because, you know, I knew Michael and I know he expects it to be funny. And so I was a bit stressed going into the table read. We landed, went right into the table read. And I said that first line, which was, am I misremembering? Was Killer Bee the first episode that
we No, did? You are not misremembering. Okay. This is the first one that we did.
Okay. Yeah. So as I was watching the episode, I remembered like saying that first line at the table read. And I say that ow when I get hit in the back of the head and it got a huge laugh. And as soon as I got that laugh, I just, and I was like, I can do this. Yeah.
So I think only you and Bill Daniels were offered the role on Boy Meets World. Everybody else, I think, had to audition, but Lee Norris and
Ben Savage.
Yeah, yeah. Who they both the show around.
Exactly.
That's pretty good company to be in.
Good company. I'll take it. I'll take it for sure.
You know, we have talked on this show a lot about the death chair. And that there was that death chair. You, having already been on the Torkelsons with Michael, did you already know of the version of the death chair from the Torkelsons? Like, had you, because you had already kind of seen that happen.
I did. Well, I mean, I lost two siblings, so I saw, you know, I saw things happen, but.
May they rest in peace. this is so.
And they were
so
wonderful. Yeah. You know, and then I had my own dance with sort of the death chair later. So, I mean, I understood it was a business. Like I knew what was going on. But Michael was, he changed my life. I mean, he gave me that opportunity on the Torkelsons and he brought me back to Boy Meets World. And, you know, I was just a kid from North Carolina. You could still hear the accent come through and I was, you know, was certainly not winning any Emmys. We were finding our way, but he recognized, I think, my instincts and he knew how to talk to me and get me to where he wanted me to be. And it was always funny. So, you know, I'm grateful to
We have been marveling at your performance.
You are so good.
It is so good. You arrive fully formed as a character. It could so easily be like a cliche, and you just manage to imbue it with such humanity. It's so funny. You're so sweet, and yet, you know, it's just great, man. You are truly, and you have such a. I mean, I said this when we first. You arrive as an amazing comedic actor.
Yeah,
and like I feel like the rest of us are kind of flailing around, and I can it's so funny. I can hear, you know, like there are times when I could see Ben, and I remember like him kind of not knowing what he was doing, which is also part of Corey, right? But like with you, you are so confident and in control of every scene you're in and with every actor that you're up against. It is wonderful to watch. And you're just like this tiny little kid. It's so cute, man.
But it's amazing. You're so comfortable in your skin. Even your physicality is very like commanding, even though you were a small child. You have a commanding presence. You are so in your skin and so sure of yourself. Yeah. You are just such a delight to watch in every episode. When you are in the episodes, I cannot take my eyes off you.
The thing that amazed me, especially about this first episode about Killer, the one we were just talking about, Killer Bees, which we're watching in order, but we shot out of order. So this is the first time that we actually were together. If you didn't know anything about Boy Meets World, you could easily think that you were the star of the show.
Yeah.
The show was built around Minkus and then
antagonist, like, at least, right? It's like Corey versus Minkus. Yeah.
Like, this is what the show is about, and this is going to be what it's like. I was just sitting there watching it going like, oh, he easily could have been the star of the show.
Well, thank God I wasn't, is all I have to say, because, I mean, major props and respect to Ben. I mean, I marveled at his ability to carry the show. It was incredible. Yeah. And I'm glad that I wasn't at the center, because I don't know how he did it. And to you all, I mean, this is really high praise coming from you guys, because I'm going back and watching it. And of course, I'm cringing at some of the things I'm doing. But Ryder, you were so natural. And Will, you're just hysterical. And Danielle, without you being there, I was like, this show was terrible. Where is she? So, you know,
it's so true.
The feeling of love is mutual. And, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, but you were really just kind, my God, the natural talent. Was there from the set. And again, we talk about this all the time. As Ryder said, we're just trying to find ourselves, especially like Eric really didn't have a character. Topanga was supposed to be on one episode. Ryder had like a line or two. We're just trying to figure out what we're doing, what we're there. And then Minkus comes in. It's like, oh, I get him right away. Like you knew Minkus right away.
Well, I love awesome. That Minkus is the quote unquote nerd character, but my favorite part of you as the character is that you didn't take ish from anybody. Like you were the first person to have a comeback so and to tough. Have a response. And I just, who is Minkus to you? How did you think of him?
I never thought of him as a nerd. I thought of him as a kid who had great parents who loved him and told him he was kid on the block, you know, like that he, and not that he was better than anybody else, but just that he was just as good as anyone else, you know, and that that his thing that he loved was learning, you know, that he loved to learn. And I shared that in common with him. I am not nearly as smart as he was at all, but I certainly could relate to that. And I also could relate to not necessarily being the most popular kid in school, but feeling good about who I was and that I kind of floated between different groups and I loved everybody. And so I sort of let that confidence infuse him, because I think the last thing anybody wanted to watch was, you know, a nerd get hit in the back of the head and then feel really sorry for himself. You know what I mean? I think everybody just wanted to, you know, loved him because he was a likable guy who just did his thing and knew he was going to find his way. So that's, you know, how I played him.
We've talked a little bit about, a real little bit about what our experience was before starting Boy Meets World. Ryder had already had quite a bit of acting experience, had already been on a show. He was a little jaded already going into Boy Meets World. Will's entire life, all he wanted was to be on a sitcom. So this was a dream come true for him. And I had literally done nothing except a few commercials and two episodes of Full House. So I was very, very new. What was do you remember your first impression of all of us the first time you met us? You were very experienced, having already been on two other shows that had been successful in their own right.
And yet I was intimidated because, you know, again, I had been told similarly, Danielle, one or two episodes tops. I was not expecting to be there.
Is that true? You weren't immediately hired as a regular, huh?
You're in the opening title credits.
I know that came later. So we filmed first two episodes, and during the filming of the second episode, they started coming to my mom and saying, We want to talk about making him a regular.
Yeah. Wow. That must have felt so good. Oh my God.
What a great feeling.
It felt great. And so because of that, I just came in meeting everybody, not knowing that, you know, I would get to form any really deep relationships. But I just remember Ben was very kind, and again, sort of what, just building on what I said, I was so taken aback of his day was scheduled. Like he was either on set or in school or doing an interview or something. And I just kind of marveled at that. And he was very kind to me, which I appreciated. I was struck by how intellectual you were. I mean, you were just a smart guy, and you had your older brother, and you were just much more worldly than I was. And I just thought you were so cool. And, you know, I just was really impressed with you all together. And Will, I loved you right away. I felt like we had a very, maybe an East Coast sensibility or kind of a vibe. Not that Connecticut and North Carolina are the same, but, you know,
still East Coasters, kind of
an East Coast thing, close with your family. And, you know, just really, you were just such a nice guy and hysterical. And I remember we, you know, later would come to live at the Oakwood. And I will never forget, as long as I live, that huge earthquake hitting.
I was thinking about the same story.
Wait, the Northridge earthquake?
Yeah, the Northridge.
So it was right before the episode, The Fugitive.
And
I was flying in. So I actually missed it because I was up north and I was flying in that day. But you guys were at the Oakwoods together, right?
Yeah, that's right. So my building was like just down the hill from Will's. And And I remember there was like a guard, gate to get on the property. And I'll never forget like coming back to work and hearing that like the guard at the Oakwood freaked out because Will and his roommate, when we lost power, turned on their gas logs to try to provide light in the apartment. And the guard like hightailed to their apartment and like out of breath was like, turn your gas logs off. And we were the East Coasters. We had no idea.
We didn't know we needed light. No. So there was an earthquake. Yeah. We had no power. Turn on gas fire. That seems like the most appropriate thing to do.
Oh,
and
my
there's
gosh.
Two guards banging on our door holding fire extinguishers thinking that the whole building is on fire. We're like, sorry, we didn't know.
That's hysterical. So do you guys, were you both woken up by the earthquake? Because it was early in the morning. Yeah. Right?
And then we were on the phone with each other. We remember your mom and I, and we were all talking about like, all right, what do we do now? Like, what's the plan? We had no power.
It's the most
we
like welcome to
car.
LA experience possible, right?
Been, the third month we were there, something like that? The second or third month we lived in Los Angeles, it was quite a way to literally wake up in the morning.
And so that earthquake was 1994. How old were you, Lee, at the time?
I think I was 11, turning 12. I'm not a math guy, believe it or not. So
so I think you were a little bit younger than all of us. Cause I thought I was the youngest at 12. I think you were just slightly younger than me.
I either started at 11 or started at 12. I don't remember, but
what year were you born?
I want to say 12. I 81 was the
okay.
Year
same.
I was born.
So, same. Yes. What month?
Okay. Oh, September.
Okay. I was born in May. So I'm just a few years older than you. Okay. A few months, not a few years. Yeah. A few months older. Okay. Wow. And so
that puts me 2 years or at least a year and a half older than you, which is significant at that age.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And,
no,
and
for
Ben
sure.
was somewhere in between too.
And I was old.
Yeah.
Ben is
ancient.
Yeah. Ben is also in September of 81, right?
I think he is. Yeah. I think he was.
I mean, his birthday's definitely September 13th.
Yeah,
and I think
he's
81.
It was close.
Was it 80?
It's 80. He's 80.
He was 80, I think. 91.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So a year older than
that. I remembered feeling, you know, younger. And then, and to just continue on, Danielle, when you came in, I was like, oh, this is my person. Like, we had school together. We had the same teacher. And you were just so friendly. And your mom was Will, I don't think I got to hang out with your parents.
Yeah, my parents would pop in and out.
Everybody's moms were so great. It was just a family, truly a family thing. It was great. Yeah.
I remember your mom very well. And I remember her beautiful accent. And she called your dad Boogie.
That's my dad's name.
That's
yep.
so great.
And she would say, well, Boogie. And I just, every time she'd say anything, I'd think I could listen to you read anything. Just so soothing and so sweet. And it was so obvious that your family was so close and you were so supported and loved. And, you know, you did. You kind of made all of us the nicest way. You weren't intentionally doing it, but you made all of us look bad because you did have such great manners. And you would say hello. You would be like, you were so polite and so on top of it. You were so professional. And I mean, man.
Lee, am I remembering correctly that you could sing really well too?
You're kind. I mean, I did sing. I wouldn't say really well, but
yeah.
I remember that. For some reason, I have this indelible memory of you like singing on set or like talking about music all the time. Like, I just remember being like,
no, I did.
This kid's
I did like
something.
To sing. I did later in college. I was in an a cappella group. I was never going to cut a record deal, but you know, I enjoyed it. So.
Okay, I got to know because they always have the best names, like Chock Full of Notes. So, what was your a cappella group name?
Yeah, of course. We were called Innuendo. And the reason we were called that is because we were the first co-ed a cappella group on campus. So we were like the sketchy a cappella kids that had female and males in the same group in a Southern college. So
I love it.
I love
that. So let's talk about then you were on the first season. How many episodes do you know about how many episodes you did in the first season?
What was the total number? Was it 22 or something like that?
Of the first season, I think we did, there were 22.
Yeah. So I wasn't in the, was it? Okay. I can't remember. So I wasn't in the pilot. And I think there was like one other that I wasn't in where they brought Rue McClanahan in and like they couldn't afford me that week or something.
Oh yeah. That was Grandma Was a Rolling Stone.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I didn't do those two, but I think
else.
I was in all the other, I think so.
Okay.
Actually, technically, you were in all of them because even in the pilot, you're in the opening title sequence. So you see there's Lee Norris right there. And then there are people who are like, wait, he wasn't on? Why he wasn't in the first episode?
So I want to get to what happened at the end of the first season? And what was that conversation? How did you find out you weren't going to be in season two? And what was that dialogue? Because I've never known the story.
Yeah, you know, you all may know more than I do, to be honest with you. I mean, it when I left on good terms, feeling great about what the work we'd done. It felt like the show was doing well, and I felt like I had contributed and done my part, and nobody was coming up to me saying, you know, not going to be back. So as far as I knew, when I was saying goodbye to you guys, I just thought, well, I'll see you in a couple of months. And it wasn't right away, but I, you know, at some point, again, I got a phone call at home, and it wasn't Michael. It was another one of the producers, and they just said, "We love Lee. He's done incredible, but we're not bringing him back." And and I think what we were told, they didn't talk to me. They told, what passed along to me was that, you know, Friends was doing really well, and that ABC wanted to age the show up, and that, you know, I have this perpetual baby face, for better or worse, and so that I just didn't look old and continue on. And I certainly accepted that. But I didn't really understand it in my gut. It didn't necessarily feel like maybe the whole story, and maybe it was, I don't know. For anybody listening, what I would say is the best is sitting here as a 40-year-old and knowing that, honestly, it really doesn't even matter at this point. Like what the lesson that this taught me at a really young age is that, especially as an actor, because we all go through this, you can put your heart and soul into something, you know, do a pretty job, and things can still not work out the way that you think because of any other number of circumstances or reasons that are beyond your control. And at 12, that was a hard thing to learn. I immediately, of course, was like, well, what did I do wrong? It must have been something. You know,
It's like your parents getting a divorce. You're like, you blame yourself.
Yeah. You know, you just immediately think that you did something. And, you know, it taught me a valuable lesson early. And I think anybody listening can identify with that, whether you're an actor or not, whether you're putting your all into a relationship or you work at a bank or whatever, there's things that happen. And it just, there are things out of your control. All you can control is what you do, you know?
Yeah, I heard a story that I don't know if this is true or not, but this is the story that I heard. I heard that ABC, because the lead-in was Family Matters, and Family Matters' big breakout star, who was also not starring on, did not start on the show, was Jaleel White as Urkel.
Right, of course.
And so ABC did not want to have two shows back-to-back that quote-unquote featured a nerd. Was the story that I heard. And I heard that years after, because I don't want to speak for Danielle and Ryder, but none of us knew you weren't going to be on the seconds. Like, I don't think we all thought you were coming back. And then it was nobody calls, and because we're kids. So nobody calls and says, we're going to change the show, or this person's not coming. You just show up at the table read and you look around and you go, wait, where's Lee? Like, that's all I knew was nobody told us anything.
I heard different things. I think I heard a version of that. And then later when I came back to do Girl Meets World, you know, Michael took my wife and I out to dinner and we had a really lovely conversation. And I'm sure part of this was that he was trying to get me to do Girl Meets World. But,
what? You know, come back. He was,
again, I would just say the best feeling is that ultimately Boy Meets World didn't need me. This show was, you guys were amazing. And luckily for me, you know, things worked out. I was able to go on and do other shows and move on with my life. And it just taught me so early on that your self-worth and your value cannot be wrapped up in being a kid actor, or it'll crush you, you know? Yes. And so I learned that really quickly. And I'm, you know, for better or worse, I'm glad that I learned it because it's helped me a lot over the course of my life. Yeah.
Well, we missed you. We really did.
Well, thanks. Yeah. Well, we found reasons to get back together, so it's been good.
Lee, hold on. I want to jump in real quick. Lee, do you still get recognized for Minkus? Like when you get recognized, is it mostly Minkus or One Tree Hill? What which is...
It depends on the age, but I'll always get recognized for Minkus. 2 weeks ago, I was running through the airport late for a flight, you know, doing the Home Alone dash through the airport. And I hear someone yell, "Hold the plane for Minkus," you know, as I'm like running. And, you know, it's just, I wanted to give him a peace sign on the way. I just, you know, it will always be there, but I'm so I'm so proud of it and I'm grateful, you know.
I'm sorry. I need to call right now. Absolutely. Please bracket this. I need a hold the plane for Minkus shirt.
I know.
So I thought the same thing. Everything
I'm sorry, but I want one. I want one of those because that's awesome.
That's amazing.
Oh, I love that.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
Sometimes it's a struggle between buying what you want over buying what you need.
But with the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can do both. You can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need.
That means you can earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team.
And 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking.
Earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like those new golf clubs you've been eyeing.
And 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a divot repair tool after you've torn up your lawn.
Let's try that again. Earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like workout equipment for your home.
And then earn 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller to soothe your sore muscles.
That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are with unlimited 2% cash rewards.
The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready.
Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Finding the right person for your team can be challenging. When it's time to hire, turn to Express Employment Professionals.
In a recent study by the Harris Poll, on behalf of Express Employment Professionals, 63% of hiring decision makers are planning to increase headcount at their company this spring, and more than half are doing so due to increased volumes of work.
Don't let the work overwhelm you. Let Express handle your hiring.
Express Employment Professionals is here to make hiring easier. We're in the business of recruiting talent.
Discover for yourself how working with the workforce experts can solve your staffing challenges.
With more than 860 locally owned offices, you'll find one near you at expresspros.com.
Each year, more than 70,000 businesses turn to Express to manage their hiring.
Make the most of your time and leave recruiting and hiring to the experts at Express.
Visit expresspros.com today.
Okay, so I wanna jump back in, and Lee, you don't have to answer this question if you don't want, but I have to ask.
Sure.
Michael called you with good news. Called you for the Torkelsons. He called you to offer you Girl Meets World.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear from Michael after they decided to let you go after season one?
Yeah, I think he called at some point. He wasn't the initial phone call, but yeah, no, he called and. And, you know, there was something about, we're going to find another show for you, you know, and, you know, you just,
Sure.
You just take it all in. And, you know, I just had to go back to school, get back into my routine. Of course, all my friends were watching Boy Meets World. So, you know, yeah. They're like, where are you? You know,
That must have been so hard.
It was tough. But, you know, you have to pick up and move on with your life. And and now looking back, I'm grateful that I got to be part of it, even if it was for a year. And then to come back and do the other stuff, it was really cool and interesting to come back and do the graduation episode. It was like a totally different show. I mean, it just felt the set and obviously you guys had aged and, you know, there weren't parents running around everywhere. It was different.
Exactly. So tell us then a little bit about the decision to come back and do a few episodes of Girl Meets World. What did you have to think about it? Was it an immediate yes? Like, what was the process for you?
Yeah, no, I mean, of course I was humbled and flattered when they asked, and I wasn't sure. It wasn't like a no or a yes right away. I was just thinking about it. And of course, Michael was like, let's go to dinner. And cause I was in LA. And so, you know, we went out to dinner and he, again, said some very nice things and said, we never should have let you go. We should have kept you on the show. All this stuff, which is really nice. Really, truly
they should have.
Nice.
They should have.
Absolutely true.
They should have.
Yes.
Was very kind. And, you know, I just said, look, you know, tell me about what you're planning to do with the character. And he told me about the character of Farkle and told me how great Corey was. And, you know, just, I thought this could be really be cool. And this was before I was an actual dad in real life, but I knew that I wanted to be a dad. And I thought, how great would this be eventually to be able to show, you know, hopefully my kid and show him season one of Boy Meets World, which I can't wait to. He's going to get a kick out of that. It's going to be a long time before I let him watch One Tree Hill or Zodiac. So that's, you know, thank goodness. So I'll show him that.
You're not going to start with Gone Girl? You're not just going
to
start with Gone Girl?
No, right to go.
No, my wife would not be pleased. So, so, you know, I can't wait for him to watch Boy and Girl. I mean, it's really special to be able to have something like that. And it was so much fun. I mean, Corey, God, all of those kids were just incredibly talented and had it so much more together than I did. I mean, I just was really blown away at how smart they were and what gifted actors they were. So really, really fun. And it was just fun to get to see you guys. I missed you. I mean, it really was a bummer. I mean, I felt like anytime I see you guys, I sort of feel like I'm 12 again, but we had this really kind of formative experience. And of course it went on for you all, but you know, I did miss you guys. And so I feel like I share that with you and even if it is just for a year. And so it's always fun to get together and have that bond, you know,
just seeing us all together. I literally feel like, no, I feel like we, no time
it's
has passed
great.
And I just want to keep, the feeling like I want to do it all the time.
We can. I have an acting question for you from an acting standpoint as a young actor. Did you feel more connected to Almost Home and the Torkelsons or to Boy Meets World?
Gosh, that's a tough question, Will. I mean, I felt connected to them for different reasons. I felt connected to the Torkelsons because I was playing a Southern kid. So, and I was a Southern kid. So, you know, there was no hiding the accent. But the Torkelsons was a single mom and it was a very different family dynamic than what I had. And I think, you know, by the time I was playing Minkus, I was 12, and there's a lot of growing up that happens between 9 and 12. And so I felt much more aware and understanding of a lot more things. And so, you know, I was processing things differently, really thinking about Minkus as a character. Whereas I feel like with the Torkelsons, a lot of it was probably just a heightened version of me with fake glasses. I always had fake glasses, whatever show I did. I never wore glasses. So, you know, that was always
amazing.
Fake. But so, you know,
reverse Clark Kent, the reverse Clark Kent. Exactly. Always.
Yeah. And, you know, they made me wear them for every run through. It was like I had to have them on and like I would get headaches because the lights would like shoot the light into my eyes. And like by the end of a run through, I'd like, you know, be taking two Advil and like, you know, going home back to the Oakwood. But anyway, so great question. But I think just by the time I got to play Minkus, I was really thinking about it more from an acting standpoint of, this is a character. I mean, you guys knew me. I shared traits with him, but I'm not Minkus and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And so I really enjoyed getting in his skin and figuring out like that tight posture. And, you know, he speaks with a very rhythmic and punching, and that's not really me. So it was really fun to get to do that. Like I loved doing that. Yeah.
Do you have any specific favorite stories from your time on Boy Meets World? Like a favorite moment, a favorite behind the scenes memory?
I have so many. I mean, I think filming every episode was really fun. The episode where Minkus gets drunk on Yoohoo because he gets the math problem wrong and is like, you know,
that's stumbles right. I forgot about that.
Oh man, I forgot about that.
I mean, that was like an incredible. Oh, and that was a roller coaster because that was another one where Michael wasn't thrilled with where it was after the first run through, and it was a lot of working and reworking to get it right. And then it when we got it in front of the audience, luckily it worked. So that was really fun. And then, you know, off camera, I just remember the times we all got to hang out as kids was just a blast. I remember like, Ryder, I think we went on a trip, you and Ben and I, and we went like snow skiing or something. And
oh, you were on this. Yes. The snowboarding trip.
And you went like, did you like bungee jump or something?
I bungee jumped.
And
I was like,
oh geez.
I mean, it was really growing up for me because I didn't have older siblings. And so I really viewed you guys as like, sort of older brothers in a way, really turning me on to things that I was not thinking about, bungee jumping in any sense of the
world. You shouldn't have been.
Did you bungee jump, Lee?
No, of course not. No.
Did you ski, Lee?
I love to ski. Yeah, I love to ski. Cool. So we did that. And then Danielle, I have a really weird memory of you and I like on a bus going to, I think they shut Disneyland down or something.
Yes.
And
for the holidays.
You and I were like in our own little world. I remember we were sitting on the bus, like playing this game that we had come up with where we just looked at each other and we had to guess the word that the other person was thinking. And so I would say like rabbit and you would be like, yes, you got it. It was rabbit. And
you guys were testing your psychic powers.
It was like, what? I mean, you know, just stupid 12-year-old stuff, but we were having so much fun.
That must have been the holiday at Disneyland.
Yes.
Because for every holiday season, they close down Disneyland after 5 p.m. and open it up for just Disney employees.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes an amazing season. And they would bus us down.
Yep.
Our entire cast and crew would get to go down in a bus. It was like one of my favorite days of every year. Oh, one of the best perks of working for Disney. It was so much fun.
Yeah,
you know what
fun.
I remember, Lee, was that we would always play football and basketball out.
Oh, that's right.
And then the thing that's really funny is we did a press day recently, and Entertainment Tonight pulled up footage they have of all of us actually playing. But it's all of us actually playing. And the funniest part was there's like four of us out there playing basketball. Yeah. We play for a good minute and a half, and no one makes a basket.
No, of course not.
Horrible.
No.
They eventually just started shooting you guys with cutting the basket, like the hoop, out of the shot, so that it just, we didn't know if you guys were making it.
Horrible.
This is why we're actors. Yeah,
exactly. Lee, I want to talk to you about your development as an actor post Boy Meets World. Like, because you went on to do more dramatic
stuff.
And then of course, you know, if you think about the, you know, the spectrum from Boy Meets World to David Fincher films, that's pretty wide and you fit into both. So I'm curious, like, when did you start to realize the difference, like the different styles of acting? Or because up until Boy Meets World, I'm assuming you had only done sitcoms.
Yes,
so how did that happen? How did you grow as an actor post Boy Meets World?
You know, it's interesting. When I came back to North Carolina, I was back in school, but I kept auditioning for things. And this was in the 90s when I think I heard you talk about this with Rusty, like all the TV movies were in vogue, you know, in the 90s. And so that was a lot of what was coming to North Carolina at the time. So I started getting hired to play these like battered and abused kids in these sad 90s TV movies.
But it was a special movie of the week.
Very special movie of the week with like, you know, Judith Light and Lindsay Wagner and Christopher Reeve and really, you know, just.
Yes.
But and it was, of course, corny and probably terrible. But it was my first taste of like doing dramatic stuff and not doing sitcom stuff. And I really got to see like the difference in, you know, between what I had done on the sitcoms and what was going on there. So that was sort of my first introduction to it. And, you know, I went on to college, I went to Wake Forest and I did theater. I didn't study theater, but I participated in theater at Wake Forest and got to do Midsummer Night's Dream and really got to really have more of a real train, because I'd never had training. So that was really my first taste of like really studying you know, Shakespeare and all of that. And so that really helped me out a lot and just gave me a lot of good life experience too. Right. As you know, I'm sure you all know, it's important to have that aspect as well.
What did you study? What did you major in?
I studied English. I was an English major.
Woo-hoo,
so yeah. No math for me. So all of that I think helped. And you know, really when I was fortunate enough to book One Tree Hill, that really, you know, a 10-year show, you get comfortable with drama, and I got to mix in comedy as well. But the Fincher movies came up during that period, and I just felt so grateful. They're small parts, but just to even have that time with him and work with incredible actors like that was just mind blowing. And I'm really grateful for every aspect of what I've been able to do. It's just been from Boy Meets World to all of this, the different experiences just teach you so much. And it's incredible.
Did David Fincher
talk to you about your work on Boy Meets World? Does David Fincher know of Boy Meets World?
He was a Minkus fan, wasn't he?
He must know. We didn't specifically talk about it, but David Fincher is a fan of actors. He loves actors, and he loves making unconventional choices, taking from someone, you know, like a Neil Patrick Harris and putting him in Gone Girl. And he really, you know, values actors and believes that they can do more than whatever they've been pegged, you know, in a TV show. And thank God that someone like him exists, because as you all know, that's what we're all fighting most of the time after we've done something like that.
But he is also notorious for like 150 takes. He's one of those kinds of guys, right? Do you have like a great Fincher like long night story?
Yeah, well, of course. My very first shot in Zodiac, it's the opening of the movie to Zodiac. I run up to the car, and there's a girl driving the car, and I lean my head in the window and I say something like, I don't know, what's taken you so long, or you're late or something. And we shot it 76 times. And literally was the most deflating thing. I'm walking back, resetting every time, and they're backing the car up and they're pulling it back in. And I'm, you know, and I think it was you might appreciate this. I think it was the first film that was fully shot on a red camera, on like fully digital.
Yes.
And so that was an interesting thing too, because we would do all these takes, and then I would hear him say delete. And as an actor,
he deleted them in front of the actors.
He would delete them, and it would of course crush my soul, because I'm like, what if I don't get it as good the next time? Maybe we should hang on to it. You know?
That's what I heard.
Delete them later.
Yeah.
No, he would call out which scenes, which takes to delete.
Yeah.
And do it in front of the actors.
Yeah.
And I heard it was like the craziest thing for people to get used to. It's like, wait a minute.
I mean,
74 didn't work, but 75 was great.
I went back to my chair after that first night and was sitting in my chair kind of dejected. And a PA walked up and was like, hey, don't feel bad. Mark Ruffalo was like 63 and Robert Downey Jr. was like 72. You know, it's just the way that it is. And once I realized that, I was like, okay.
Yeah, he really believes in actors getting beyond, like, out of their head.
Yes.
Like, and he believes that you just have to say it so many times that you're not even aware of what you're saying. Like, that's his sort of version of getting actors to be as present as possible. But I can imagine it must be so difficult if you don't know that going in.
I actually responded to it well, because I think coming from the child actor background, where it is often drilled in our heads, that was sort of a crutch for me. And so for me, I actually really appreciated it, because it broke down a lot of that. And I know some actors don't love it as much, but it worked for me. So
that's so cool.
Well,
and you had to rely on Minkus to do all of your Fincher stuff. Like, what would Minkus have done here?
What would Minkus do?
I get that. Yeah, well, no, it's what you have to do.
Lee, we are so happy you joined us for this episode. Where can we find you now? What are you working on now? Just give us any sort of update and where people can find you.
Yeah, you can, all the grandmothers and grandfathers listening can find me on Facebook at Lenoris Official. I do have a like a private Instagram that's just for family and friends, which I would,
you can put that in our chat,
welcome you all to. But you know, I'm an old fashioned guy. Nobody cares about me eating a sandwich or whatever. So I just keep all that stuff private, but
amen.
I'm there on Facebook, and, professionally and personally, I'm good. I'm so lucky to have found just the most wonderful person, my wife, Andrea, and we're so blessed to have our son. And my parents are still healthy, thankfully, and you know, things are good. So it's thank you for having me. It's wonderful to see you guys. Thanks for, I mean, I don't know if we're saying goodbye yet, but thanks for being so special to me and always being so welcoming over the years.
I mean, you are a forever family member of us. And I can't believe that all of our memories were just in that one season, because I feel like I have so many memories with you. And yeah. I wish we did have a full 7 years of them.
We should have been that way.
Boy meets retirement home. It's coming. Never say never.
Oh, I want you to take the roles. I can't do 76 takes of the Feeny call. I can't do 76 takes of the Feeny call. Can't do it.
Maybe Fincher will direct and you'll change your mind, Will. We'll see.
Yes.
I would do it for that. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for joining us for this. We love you so much. And please give our love to your family, Andrea, your son, and your mom and dad.
I will, same to you all.
And I know my mom would be mad at me if I don't say, please tell them hello from my mom and dad as well.
Because, of course, I will.
All of our parents were close.
Yeah. Yes, no, they'll be very excited and they're proud of all of you. So, yeah.
All right. Well, we love
you. Great to see you, Lee.
Love you guys.
Love you. Thank you.
Miss you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves, and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
When it comes to Podmeets World, we're synonymous with two things: watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only. Sometimes it's a struggle between buying what you want over buying what you need.
But with the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can do both. You can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need.
That means you can earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team.
And 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking.
Earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like those new golf clubs you've been eyeing.
And 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a divot repair tool after you've torn up your lawn.
Let's try that again. Earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like workout equipment for your home.
And then earn 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller to soothe your sore muscles.
That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are with unlimited 2% cash rewards.
The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready.
Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Finding the right person for your team can be challenging. When it's time to hire, turn to Express Employment Professionals.
In a recent study by the Harris Poll, on behalf of Express Employment Professionals, 63% of hiring decision makers are planning to increase headcount at their company this spring, and more than half are doing so due to increased volumes of work.
Don't let the work overwhelm you. Let Express handle your hiring.
Express Employment Professionals is here to make hiring easier. We're in the business of recruiting talent.
Discover for yourself how working with the workforce experts can solve your staffing challenges.
With more than 860 locally owned offices, you'll find one near you at expresspros.com.
Each year, more than 70,000 businesses turn to Express to manage their hiring.
Make the most of your time and leave recruiting and hiring to the experts at Express.
Visit expresspros.com today.
I mean, how is it possible that we just, it feels like no time has passed.
He's amazing.
Isn't he great?
Yeah. It was so great to, I mean, I first connected with him when we did Girl Meets World. I ended up directing a couple episodes with him in it. And it was just so much fun to be adults together and to talk about what we do. And, you know, he's truly an actor's actor. Like, he's one of those people. That's why I wanted to ask him about acting, is because he went from nailing the sitcom performance at 12, being above and beyond anybody. And then, you know, going on to do such great work and such wide, you know, varied work stylistically. And he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's talking about. Oh, it's just such a great
guy. That's the thing. When you're that good, that young, and then you decide to study the craft, it's like, man, how sky's the limit at that point, because you're just so good when you start. Amazing.
I can't believe it. I also had a very similar experience, right, or working with him on Girl Meets World, like just looking at each other and being like, I can't believe we're here. Like, we're adults. We're just adults together. And he's right. Lee and I spent a lot of time together. We were, you know.
Yeah, you guys were kind of inseparable on the set, if I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, we were inseparable. We were the youngest. We were very close. I think even though Orange County is a long way away from North Carolina, there were still a lot of similarities. I think we both felt just kind of out of our element a little bit. And so we were very close. And then being together with him on Girl Meets World was amazing. And I think we exchanged information. We were like, oh, we should get together. He wasn't living far from me in LA when he was living in LA. And then, you know, it just being an adult kind of sucks sometimes and you lose contact. So I want to get all of his information so that we can actually get together.
He's on MySpace. So you can go, pick him up there. Just great.
I remember being very happy to discover that he had no bitterness.
Yeah.
You know, that he is not carrying around this, like, because it could so easily drive somebody crazy to be known as Minkus your entire life. And then also to only have done one season. And, you know, that sense of, like you described, like, what did I do wrong when he finds out he's not coming back for the second season? And for him to rebound from that, be so confident, healthy, and put it into such a healthy perspective. And I remember when we reconnected on Girl Meets World, I was so appreciative of that because I was always worried. You know, I remember being like, what happened to Lee? Does Lee, you know, does Lee hate us all?
Yeah.
Does Lee think, you know, does he resent this time on this show? And to find out
that from other
that's
guests.
Not the case.
We've heard that from other guests that have like, that were let go or something where it bothered them for years and years and years. They carried it with them.
Well, think about how different it would be now if we had cell phones. Back then, we didn't have an easy way of being like, hey man, what happened? Where are you? We didn't know. Like, it was just, we thought we were going to see him in a few months and then he didn't return for season two. And then it was just like, okay, I guess he's just out of our lives. Like,
it's weird. Also, it's a really bizarre kind of unspoken reminder that we could go at any time. All of us.
What I meant
as actors on the show. Like, you're
but
on
also
the
we
show.
Could die at no, any no, time.
That's not what I meant. Thank you very much. I meant that we were lucky to be on Boy Meets World. And then it was like we saw it with Lee. And then we saw it with Tony Quinn. And then we saw it. There's a number of times where it was just like, you think you're doing this and you're kicking butt and you're having a great time. And then you get a phone call. Hey, you're not on the show anymore.
Yeah.
And so we never really.
That's a pretty intense environment, guys.
Yeah.
Like, we take that for granted now, but that is a weird thing. This, you know, sort of Hunger Games quality of being on a TV show. Like, we probably,
And he was better than us. He was a much, but I'll only speak for myself. He was a much better actor than I was when we were kids. A much better actor.
Definitely better than
me. There was no reason for him to go other than he went. Like, for whether it was political, whether it was ABC, whether it was money, whatever it was, hey, thanks, you were awesome, bye. And I'm not sure we ever, as kids especially, ever discussed that, where it's like, wow, he was here and now he's not. And that could happen to any of us at any time.
Well, no, I think we discussed it and I think we were scared of it, but we also felt like we could avoid it by, you know, doing our job and not messing up. And that kind of pressure is really intense. I mean, that's the pressure that we internalized. And in retrospect, you know, as a healthy grown, I think grownups probably do this too on TV shows. But I think, I mean, in particular on our show, there was a fear of being fired constantly. I mean, that was an all pervasive feeling.
Maybe until like the fifth or fifth, sixth season, we knew we weren't going. I mean, they weren't going to fire Sean in season five. Topanga wasn't going anywhere.
Certainly
in season
for the
five.
First couple of years, though.
I think
I agree with you in principle, in general, but we also renegotiated contracts at times.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I remember being
too.
Scared. And I remember feeling
too.
Like, and I also wanted off the show at a certain point. And I remember being wooed back. And so there was always this, you know, this pressure that was intense because there was a lot of a lot of power on the line, money and fame and
the
sense
of
self-worth
and will I ever work again if I leave this show or
well, that was a fun way to end that episode. Sorry.
I love Lee. I'm so glad he was here. That was really great. I can't wait to jump into recapping the episode. Killer Bees is his number 105, directed by David Trainer. We're going to get into that next. But this was really fun. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, Pod Meets World Show. And you can email us, podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com. And then we got merch.
Merch.
It's lots of shirts. We're going to do a David Fincher shirt. We're probably going to do a shirt about holding the plane for Minkus.
Hold the plane for Minkus.
We're just going to have
that shirt.
Yeah, we're going to have so many shirts. But you know what? You know what somebody suggested, and I think it's a really good idea, is mugs. I would like a mug.
A shirt with mugs on it. Great idea. Is that not, did I misunderstand?
You misunderstood
okay,
that
Okay, sorry,
part.
My bad.
Actually, the reverse is probably true. It's going to be a mug with too much shirts on it. So.
All right, it's my turn. We love you all. Pod dismissed. Pod Meets World is an iHeart podcast produced and hosted by Danielle Fischel, Will Friedle, and Ryder Strong. Executive producers Jensen Karp and Amy Sugarman. Executive in charge of production, Danielle Romo. Producer and editor, Tara Sudbach. Producer, Lorraine Ruiz. Engineer and Boy Meets World superfan, Easton Allen. Our theme song is by Kyle Morton of Typhoon. Follow us on Instagram at Pod Meets World Show or email us at podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com. This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves, and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So, make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference.
That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through.
BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy.
Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you.
Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303 mile range, available two-way charging and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
I am happy to announce that Target Circle, the program we all know and love, now has automatic deals.
And with the all-new Target Circle being free to join, there has never been an easier way to take advantage of the most deals at Target.
When you shop in-store or online, Target Circle deals will be automatically applied at checkout, so you get the savings without lifting a finger.
And right now, you can sign up for Target Circle 360, which offers unlimited same-day delivery for just $49 for the first year of membership.
That's $50 off the regular price.
And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you can save an extra 5% your way every day.
Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details.
Same-day delivery is subject to terms. Applies to orders over $35.
For 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in-store or at target.com/circle card.